Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome back to Whiskey Congress. We've got a whiskey to review that's a little more familiar. You know, typically we've been finding neat stuff that either one of us or neither of us have ever had. Today we're going with one that we've had a few times together and separately.
Oh, have we now?
We have. So we're reviewing Jameson. Jameson Irish Whiskey, just the standard offering. So I drink a ton of Jameson with you. It's kind of our standard pre-show shot when we do shots. It's a nice, mild, kind of sweet whiskey. I give it an 86, which is in no way meant to be an insult, but the thing I love about Jameson is I don't mind sipping it, and I feel no guilt just throwing it down.
Well, that's the. It's funny that you say that, because that's exactly how I describe it, is that it is, it really works as both. It works as a shooter. It works as a sipper. I give it an 88.
Oh, wow.
I think because the flavor of Jameson maybe kind of gets lost in the mix sometimes.
Maybe because I'm slamming it down every
time
I drink it.
Yeah, well, it does. I mean, so many people just order it as a shot, or it gets mixed in with, you know, Bailey's and Jameson and coffee, or, you know, there's a couple of, you know, ways to mix it.
Including ginger ale is a popular
choice. Right, well, ginger ale, and, you know, you could make yourself a leprechaun and all these other things, but...
What is a leprechaun?
Okay. But... The thing about it, though, is that when you sip it, there are some flavor notes that actually do stand out. It's like you said, it is sweet. There is some honey. It's buttery. It's soft. There is some oak to it, but the oak doesn't overpower it. And so It's got a good balance, and it actually is a good quality tasting whiskey all in all. My one of the biggest drawbacks for it for me is that there's no age statement, and it's 80 proof across the board All the time. And even with their different offerings, with the, you know, finished in port barrels or what have you, they're all 80 proof. And honestly, if I'm drinking whiskey, I just want something stronger than Smirnoff Vodka. So
okay.
Yeah, I mean and that's my personal preference. But the annoying thing about it, though, is that I want it to be stronger than 80 proof, but I want it to taste like it's 80 proof, right? Like, I don't want to get punched in the face by alcohol, but at the same time, I don't want to have to consume, you know, more than one or two to actually feel the effects. So, you know, go figure. But that's why I give it a slightly higher score. I give it an 88 because the taste is actually really, it is good when you stop and sip it and you don't slam it down as fast as you can, which you've seen me do countless times. As have, you know, I've got friends who listen to the podcast who have slammed down many shots of Jameson with me, who understand what that's all about. But I do say, next time you order a shot of Jameson, maybe you have a couple sips before you do, you know, slam it down to get rid of a bad day or to celebrate a good day or everything else in between.
Or whatever excuse I'm using that day.
Whatever excuse we're using to just do shots of Jameson.
Okay. Well, we got a new Congress also.
We do have a new Congress. We've got a number of new, freshman congressmen. And right out of the gate, we've got some fireworks. We have the, Democratic congressman out of California, Brad Sherman, who decided that first day on the job, he was going to introduce the articles of impeachment, for President Donald Trump. And then you've got Rashida Tlaib out of Michigan, who, you know, was at a party a few nights ago and says, you know, gives this impassioned and emboldened speech where she finishes it off with, "We're going to impeach that motherfucker."
Right. And, which makes me wonder how many shots of Jameson she had by that point.
Like, I feel like Jameson was involved in her night, which, you know, good for you. Although I believe she's Palestinian and Muslim. And so she
perhaps does not drink.
Maybe there was none for her. But this to me is where this is a concern of mine with the Democrats and the left right now, is that they're just not going to be able to resist to the urge to you know, follow the pack, right, and take that pack mentality of resist Trump at all costs, get rid of Trump at all costs. We don't like him. He's not what we particularly stand for. So the only way we can even deal with him is to remove him from office. And we don't care how we do it. We know we have this thing called impeachment. So let's just use that and start over. Right. Right. Like completely ignoring pretty much every legal process, every sensible argument. It's just upset because they lost an election that they thought that they were going to win. Upset that they don't like the guy on so many different levels. And so because he says mean things on Twitter and he's not nice, that we're going to impeach him. And you know, what's funny is if you're going to impeach Trump, right?
Right.
And you're going to successfully impeach him, which means you start the articles of impeachment in Congress, right? Which is initially your indictment.
Right.
And then the actual, you know, trial happens in the Senate. If you're going to do that successfully, then you're going to need,
I want to say 67 senators.
Well, yes, you're going to need 67 senators, but another vehicle, like a key vehicle that you're going to need in order to get that conviction is this Mueller probe that was begun by, right, congressional Democrats.
Right.
Right? Right? That demanded that this happen, right? Like, so
Mueller probe is a special counsel. Is that, I don't know. Okay, sorry. I didn't know that that was actually the trigger for it. I thought it was Department of Justice. Right. I think the House had its own investigation, and that kind of got shut down, and that may start again. But I thought the Mueller probe was independent of Congress. I thought. I could be wrong.
So, thanks for that input. It is incorrect.
Okay. Okay.
We've got Congress who is willing to basically step on their own feet at this point in time, right? Step on their own tongue, you know, in football and in the locker room, it's, you know, the coach would say, step on your own dick. In order, because they're just so blinded by their disdain for Trump, right? And here's the thing. If you're smart about this, you let the Mueller probe play out.
Right.
You let him get all his ducks in a row. You let him finish it whenever the hell he's going
to
do it.
His grand jury just got extended by 6 months.
Right, because it was, you know, supposed to go for 18 months, and now it's, you know, we're coming up on that deadline, and so he's got another 6 months. So part of me just says, Mueller, just hurry the fuck up. Come on now. You know, I mean, but part of it is that, you know, he's bringing a number of these, you know, witnesses and these different players are being sentenced, and from those sentencing hearings, additional information is coming out. He's chasing that information down, which leads me to believe that while I would love for this thing to wrap up and come to an end, it doesn't seem like it's going to end anytime soon. And so any of the chatter that you hear that, oh, it's all going to, it'll all be done before opening day, I don't think that's accurate and or true. And I feel like this is going to extend on probably at least into the fall. So we've got a fair amount of time. But the reason why this is critical is that, listen, as a Congress, if you want to impeach him, then why would you start an additional investigation into Trump, which is what impeachment would be?
Right.
While an investigation of him is already going on, and you've got witnesses who have already made statements, right? So now what you're going to do is basically you're going to have parallel investigations going on, witnesses giving statements, and what happens is, what would be the worst nightmare for a prosecutor in this scenario with parallel investigations?
Witnesses saying things inconsistent between...
Absolutely.
Right.
Right, that is absolutely, as a prosecutor, your worst nightmare, right? Like, so what you don't... Because as soon as you do that, guess what?
You're no longer a credible witness, right?
So that means witnesses fall apart on Mueller's side, and then witnesses fall apart on what Congress is trying to do, right, in terms of impeachment. And guess what? You make Trump a more sympathetic character, and not only do you lose this whole impeachment nonsense, right, you probably end up pushing Trump into the presidency in 2020.
Another I'm not going to disagree with any of that, but another aspect of this that gives me concerns is the Democratic Party is in no way united. There's a pack of Democratic congressmen and women who you know, like this Brad Sherman guy are just gung-ho, fire up the papers, let's get this party started. And then there's a bunch of more practical, logical, maybe longer-term... go ahead, pour your soda water. Longer-term Congress members who are going, whoa, this is not going to work. This is a possibly political suicide. It's certainly going to...
Well, you know who the key is there?
Who?
Nancy Pelosi.
Okay, I agree.
Now, listen,
I've recently sworn in as Speaker of the House again.
And I've railed against Nancy Pelosi. And what I will say is, while I'm not a fan of hers, the reality is that she is a cagey vet.
Yes.
And she knows her way around the political arena. And she's not going to be bullied or manipulated by Trump. It's just not going to happen. And he doesn't... there's not a lot that he can say about her that's going to hurt her.
Right.
Right? Like, his base will believe anything that he says. Right? I mean, he'll throw whatever out and they'll support it and defend it and whatever. But in terms of, you know, people in the middle who are kind of on Trump and, you know, obviously your people on the left, like, he's not going to change their view of her. And she's been doing this long enough to where, and we're seeing it already, where she's just not going to kind of cave just because he's throwing these things out there, right? Like, she understands, the logistics. She understands what the procedures and the processes are, right? So Trump can say, well, the shutdown is going to, I'll extend the shutdown for months, years even. Right, he said that today.
He did, yes.
That he doesn't care if it goes for months or years. Okay, fine. And that he could declare a national emergency and just build the wall because it's a national emergency. Well, who has the power to issue a national emergency in the United States?
Is it just the president or is it the Congress?
It's Congress.
Okay.
It's got to go through Congress. They got the power of the purse. Right?
True.
Like, so she looks at that and she sees those things and she hears these threats. They don't faze her because she knows that it's bullshit. Right? You could try it, but she's just going to shut it down. Right? Like, so that's where his inexperience in politics and in government are hurting him right now. Right? Because he doesn't understand these things and he's got Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, whether you like them or not, they've been around. They understand the very basics all the way to the more advanced levels of the game. And this is where he needs certain people around him, right, to kind of rein him in.
Yep.
And say, listen, before you go out and just run off and say this and do that, but all those people are gone, right? Like, so now he's kind of out there on an island with a bunch of yes men who will... you know, say whatever he says, they'll just, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do that. And we'll see where it gets him.
You know, so from a political angle, I think Nancy Pelosi was the one and only choice for Speaker.
She was, and I didn't want her to be, but I didn't have anybody to replace her with.
She's already the villain, right?
Yeah.
From the right's perspective, they have said anything and everything you can say about Nancy Pelosi, and they'll repeat the same old stuff. But she is, next to possibly only Hillary, and Obama, the most vilified person, from the perspective of the right. And it's already done. That's played out. It's
right.
It's nothing new coming from that. So if the Democrats would have thrown, one of these freshmen out there or some young person who's idealistic and, you know, there to impeach, it would have probably been a fucking disaster from the word go.
Right.
They would have been immediately attacked.
It was the right call. She's already been in a position before for an extended period of time. And... she's just got that hardened shell where you're not going to be able to penetrate it.
Right.
People will say, oh, well, the one of the biggest knocks on her that they have is that, well, you know, she requested a private jet and spent all sorts of taxpayer money. yes, she did. That's bad. Definitely would prefer if she didn't use private jets with, you know, loaded up with booze and food. But at the same time, I'm thinking maybe a run for Congress isn't so bad. You know, and shit, I mean, if that's the case, then I'll be one of her interns. But I just, I don't know. Obviously, she's the right choice for the job. And she's ready for a fight with Donald Trump that I don't know if he's fully prepared for, right? Like the Trump, the people that are pro Trump 100% will say he's prepared for any and all fights and he's playing 3D chess and blah, 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 right. Yada, yada, yada. Maybe. We'll find out. This is an arena that he's only been in for really like 2 years. And just because he knows people and he's paid a lot of money doesn't mean that he's actually played the game. You know, it's one thing to watch an NFL game from the sidelines. It's a whole, or from the stands, it's a whole other thing to be on the sideline.
Either or in the field.
You know, either calling plays or, you know, coaching and making changes or being actually in the field and playing. And Trump is now in the field and playing with people who have been doing this, you know, for a hell of a lot longer than him. And you're not going to convince me that his IQ is that high and it's higher than anyone else's that he's going to be going up against. So, again, like I said, we'll see how this plays out, especially as it pertains to the shutdown on the wall. He's got some – like, there's – we as a country – I'm not going to place the shutdown on Trump. I'm not going to place it on Democrats. I'm not placing it on anybody because it takes two to tango.
All right, I –
You will. That's fine. But it takes two to tango. You've got a president who's steadfast, who says, we have to have the wall for Homeland Security. You've got the other side, his opposition, that's saying, we can open the government. We can continue negotiations about this wall down the line. There's money already appropriated that needs to be spent that we can begin to address some of these issues. And I think there's other things that could be done, right? Like what about DACA? No one talks right. about DACA anymore, True. Right? But DACA, what that would have done, what that does is DACA with the path to citizenship kind of resolves some of the issues that we have with people who have overstayed visas and children that were born here through parents that came here illegally and were born, like the whole thing. So that solves and resolves a lot of issues for some of the immigration, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you swap that out for the wall, right? And again, like, I don't think that the wall is a great solution to anything. I think the wall is a campaign promise and it's symbolic, but it's not necessarily the actual answer that the president says it is, but I'm willing to give it up. Others are not, right?
And I am not.
And I guess the one question that I have yet to hear a good answer to is why this is the hill that the progressive left is so adamant upon dying on.
Well, I have a few reasons for digging in on this one. One of them is the whole concept of building a wall across the entire southern border of the country is just fucking dumb. It's just dumb.
But if you, okay, let's say we get, what if we remove the idea of it's a concrete wall from, you know, the edge of Tijuana all the way to, what, Georgia, I guess? Or I don't know.
I mean, the Mexican border ends with Texas, I think.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, so, I mean, okay, so fine, whatever. And this is, you know, bad geography on my part.
Right.
But let's say if we said, okay, fine. I guess it's hard for me to say. I mean, like, listen, does it help? Maybe a little, right? And is it a waste of money? Probably.
Yes. Let me help you with that one. Yes.
But we just...
Here's where you and I totally split. The idea that we waste money all the time, so let's waste $5 billion more, I just don't sign on to that. And I get your point. But I just don't sign on to it.
And it could help. But it's, and here's the other thing. Hold on. I got completely off my point. The whole, the reality is that whatever Trump is saying, right, it's different than the reality. The reality is that it's not going to be a concrete wall from fucking Tijuana to El Paso.
Right.
Right? And I feel like El Paso is a little bit short.
It is, but I'm
okay, you get my point, right? But it's not going to be a concrete wall from California to the end of Texas. Right? Like, right. It's going to be, like, the wall, it's going to be a fence, it's going to be a wall, it's going to be nothing, it's going to be Border Patrol agents, it's going to be drones, it's going to be landmines, I don't fucking know. I mean, it's going to be a lot of different things. What do you mean, wow?
Landmines? Where do people blow up as they cross the border?
Oh, are you not familiar what surrounds fucking Gitmo?
Well, Gitmo's a bit of a different situation. We're in...
Pardon moi?
Gitmo versus the Texas border?
Yeah.
I think we... first of all, I'll pardon your French. No, I don't think that's an apples to apples.
Why?
Because Gitmo, we are kind of intruding on a foreign country that we have, until recently, an embargo with and a hostile military relationship with, where people... Unless the movie A Few Good Men lied to me, we literally have centuries lining up against each other and threatening each other on a daily basis. You've said
what the fuck do you think is going
on? Don't you jest at me, you son of a bitch. So for those people who don't know this, Steve has a habit of sending me pictures of Colonel Nathan Jessup from A Few Good Men when he's annoyed with me or wants to one-up me, and I usually get him at 3 in the morning after you've had a few more whiskeys, and I wake up to a picture of Colonel Jessup. But... I don't see that as apples to apples. I mean, that's a military engagement.
Then you're insane.
Okay.
How many Mexican cartels are there?
7.
Okay.
I don't know.
Right. Well, you're throwing out a random number. Right. Actually, you're silly. Not too far off. But between the Mexican between the number of drug cartels that we have, okay. Right, that are very aggressive, that are very violent, that literally
true.
Chop people's heads off, right, are using military grade equipment in terms of their weaponry. How is it different?
It's different because it's government
entities. It's different because you don't like the comparison, but it is what it is, right? I mean, the fact is that you've got a pretty serious, like, so with Cuba, right? Like, I mean, like, is Cuba really that big of a threat right now?
No. Cuba hasn't been a threat for since 1961.
Okay. So I agree. All I'm saying is I threw the landmines out there just as a possibility. It wasn't that big of a deal.
Right. We're derailing.
Right. You got derailed. Fault. But the whole point is that the border, like, this whole thing with the wall... We even know General Kelly, as he's leaving, is saying, listen, everybody knows that it's not going to be a wall. Everybody knows it's not going to be a solid concrete wall all the way through. It's symbolic. He's using it just as a political football. He wants a win. He wants to say,
yes.
Give me $5 billion for a wall, even though it's not going to be a solid wall. They're gonna give me $5 billion, and that's gonna go to agents. It's gonna go to various things other than just a giant steel slatted wall or fence or whatever.
Right. So here's one thing I want to parse out though. When you say solve the problem, we're talking about two different problems here, right? We're talking about illegal immigration and we're talking about drug trafficking. And I think we would both agree that these cartels will not be thwarted by a wall of any height. I would speculate that the vast majority, if not the overwhelming majority, of drugs that cross over the border from Mexico into the United States do so by air or water. And if we build a wall, they will find a way to get under it, over it, or around it, because there's a whole lot of money to be made in making that happen. So that's one issue. And do we agree that the wall will do nothing in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, I've said it. I've said it multiple times, right? I mean, I've said, you know, whether it's drugs or human trafficking or illegal immigration, that there are multiple ways around it. Does it slow?
From an immigration standpoint, I think it does slow things down or change dynamics.
Yes, it changes dynamic. It slows things down, which is a good thing. Depending on how it impacts the economy, right? If prices of things coming out of California skyrocket, right? Because now they don't have that, you know, cheap labor, and they got to pay people normal wages, and they got to find
people to do it in California
and all that other stuff. I mean, like, that could definitely have a negative impact. So it's not just black and white, and the Democrats are not doing a great job of kind of articulating that and pushing Trump on that. And Trump is not, he himself is doing a bad job of misrepresenting what all goes into border security. He's just saying wall, and he's doing it because he said build a wall randomly at a fucking debate, you know, 2.5-3 years ago. And now, in the way his mind works, he's got to win on that particular word. That word.
Yep.
Right? And that's the frustrating part where this all comes in. And at some point in time, someone's got to be the adult. Someone's got to be the bigger person. And
oh, that's adorable.
but it's just...
You're right. But we also know that being an adult has not worked in U.S. politics in a long time.
Right. I mean, and...
Since Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter tried to talk to the American people like we were adults who could handle bad news and got run out of town on a rail for doing so. But if we can just fast forward to other incoming Congress members, Rashida Tlaib was caught on video saying something along the lines of, we're not going to work with Trump, we're going to impeach the motherfucker. And, it's not... That's not out of context. That's not speculation. I've seen the video. She said it. I think it's a pretty dumb thing to say. All right, so two things. In this world where you know, if you are in a public setting and you are a public figure, you are very likely going to be filmed doing something whenever that something is at all social media post worthy.
Yeah, but I mean, you're also making assumption that she cares.
No, I'm not trying to make that assumption.
But I don't think she does, right? She's not backpedaling. She's not apologizing. She's not backing off of it. She said it. She meant it. There's been that's the whole resist movement. This has been an undercurrent
as a flat out.
Right. They want Trump out of office. Right. And we talked about it just, minutes ago. And so, she didn't mess up in her mind because this is how she, like, this is the agenda,
right? Right.
Like, she's putting it out there. There are some Democrats who are, and this is where Nancy Pelosi comes in and where she's very beneficial because she understands that that's a bad play. Let's impeach, she knows that 100%. Now, if something happens with this Mueller probe where he pops out and is just like, oh, by the way, I've got recordings of Trump with Putin in 2014, plotting and scheming on how they were going to overtake the presidency, and Russians were funneling money into Trump's hotels and condos that were failing and going bankrupt and blah, 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 and Trump was able to pull money out. And okay, if that happens, then... Now maybe impeachment all of a sudden is back on the table. But
Pelosi, there has to be a cause.
But Pelosi isn't betting on that.
And right.
She's not. She knows. I have a feeling that she's got a good idea that that's not coming. So, but in order to just keep the resistors at bay, she's saying it's on the table. And what she's going to do is when Mueller comes back and says nothing definitive, right? He's going to say, oh, it was cloudy. It was messy, but we've got these indictments. We got these guilty pleas. We've got these sentencings. We've got this, that, and the other. These are some things that we should change to avoid this from happening in the future, right? Which all of that says nothing about Trump and collusion and conspiracy and blah, blah, blah. Then Pelosi is going to go ahead and say, okay, as a party, right, even though that Tom Perez is the DNC chairman,
right.
She's going to say, as a party, we're done with impeachment. Not happening. Get over it.
Right.
Right? Now, we have to figure out how we beat him...
In 2020.
Right? And so now we have to badger him with policies, and we're going to lay policy after policy after legislation on his desk. Things that we know that have bipartisan support, and we're going to do it over and over and over again, and he's not going to sign them because he's a brat... Right. And then unless maybe he flips, maybe he recognizes where he, dodges a bullet with the whole impeachment thing and says, OK, now that that's all over, now I'm willing to work with you guys. But I don't think that's how he's going to behave. And so they're going to throw these things on his desk. And then that's how they're going to attack him.
So you said a minute ago, like if the you know people in Congress would act like adults, we'd be better off. You want proof that they can't do it? Most of the right-wing media and most of the right-wing Congress is responding to this woman saying, we're going to impeach the motherfucker by saying, that language is unacceptable, it's offensive, it's whatever. And, you know, fuck off. I mean, we're adults here. And the fact that we're going to get offended by words...
Yeah,
and, but... and let me finish. Democrats did the same thing when Trump called countries shithole countries. I mean, I think one... I don't remember who it was, but one Democrat said something like, that was the most offensive language I've ever heard. I'm like, all right, if that's true,
right.
then you shouldn't be in Congress.
Right.
Because if the word shithole offends you so much you can't function and do your job, you're not qualified. So this is proof that we have bipartisan childishness and bullshit, and that will rule the day. I'm disappointed to say, but I doubt you'll even push back with me on that one.
No, I won't. I mean, it is ridiculous. But... You know what's even more ridiculous?
What's that?
All right, first of all, let me start this off with... So on this show, I've made it very clear I'm not a huge fan of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I'm not a fan of her.
You've been very clear, yes.
I thought that she's put some, you know, irresponsible and ill-informed information out there. But that being said, probably a couple of weeks ago, I just had a little bit of an epiphany on her. She's young. I think she's 28, 29 years old. And she's the youngest woman elected to Congress. And while I'm big on, you know, holding everyone to the same standard and you know, keeping people accountable... The fact of the matter is that she's very young in a big role. Very young in a big role. And so I need to balance out criticism of her. Like, I'm criticizing her like I would criticize a Ted Cruz. Or I'm criticizing her like I would criticize even a Beto O'Rourke. And I don't think that's necessarily fair on my end. So I'll recognize that. I think that... some of the information that she does put out there, I think that she does need, it needs to be better. She needs to tighten it up. There needs to be...
I mean, she's misspoken a few times. Do we really know that that's her baseline of knowledge, or I think she just spoke
poorly?
Yeah,
but I mean, here's the thing. Like, you're a congressman now. A congresswoman.
Yes.
Yeah. And so...
what you say matters, I agree.
What you say matters. You're the person who is, you know, crafting... legislation, right? Like, you have the power of the purse. So I need you to be articulate. I need you to be aware of what you're saying. And so that being said, given her youth, I think that it's fair to say, okay, I'm not going to give you a pass. I'm still going to call you out and say, this is inaccurate, this isn't right, this doesn't make sense, and that will never work. But I'm not going to say she shouldn't... I mean, she was voted in, right? And that's how it works, right? She was voted in, so she what you have to do to get a position, she earned it.
And she unseated a mainstream Democrat.
And you know what? That's... and to a degree, that's kind of what you need, right? Like, you want change. Like, everybody wants change, but we can't agree... on what we want changed or how we want it changed. So maybe she is that agent of chaos and agent of change that we need, but she just needs some development and guidance on how to do it, right? Or maybe she doesn't need any of that at all, and maybe you just let her do what she wants to do, and you know what I mean, to a degree. Like, I mean, like, she, you know, starts to put some of these things together. She gets beat back, she adjusts, she makes changes and amendments, and she brings them back, and all of a sudden they go from being completely radical to much more acceptable. But they're the things that can create the change that she and people like her want to see. I don't know, but my point is, I'm opening my mind to just what she's about. I'm still very willing to be critical of her when she throws shit out there that that should be criticized. But what I won't stand for are people attacking her for bullshit.
Okay.
Right? And
some, she is polarizing, right?
She's very polarizing. I mean, it's remarkable. And I realize, I'm like, listen, you're on the wrong side of history with this. Right? Like, because I think my criticisms were legit, but I think I was going over the top. And so I need to scale it back and kind of look at her and you know, look at it from a whole. And so, fine, I'll attack the policies without attacking the person. But conservatives have said, fuck the policies. We're just going to straight attack the person. Right?
Right.
Like,
she's a socialist. She's a communist.
Socialist, communist. Okay, fine. But they took a picture of her house. Right? They took a picture of her house. And the claim is that they're alleging that she claimed she grew up in poverty in the Bronx, right? And then they're saying, well, no, you grew up in a house in Westchester, New York, which is...
very affluent,
which is an affluent, whatever. And you went to this fancy high school, and your dad was an architect, and you're from money, and you're lying, and blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. Okay. Here's the thing. She did grow up in Westchester. I think she lived in the Bronx. The family moved to Westchester. I think the dad died at some point. Dad was an architect. But listen, just because you're an architect doesn't mean you make a lot of money. I work with architects every fucking day. Let me tell you, they are not all rich. All right? They are not all rich. And some of it is because some of them fucking suck. But at the same time...
but George Costanza always wanted to pretend to be an architect.
Right. Well... you know, I mean, you do have some very wealthy architects, but in a place like New York City, you're going to come across a lot of architects who are not very wealthy. So the architect
asks you if you want fries with that, is that what you're...
Exactly. I mean, there's plenty of those. But another thing, they showed a picture of her house, and it was a fucking bungalow. It looked like it was barely, you know, it looked like it was barely 1,200 square feet. You know, I mean, and they're just like, this is the house Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez grew up in. Does it look like poverty to me? And I'm like, you realize that house in Ohio is less than $100,000, right?
Right.
Which, I mean, and that house in New York is probably $300,000, which in Westchester is fucking nothing, right? Like, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's fucking crazy. Like, so they put this picture up. I mean, literally, it looks like maybe a 2-bedroom house with 1 bathroom. Right? Like, right. I mean, like, it just, like...
Any idea how many siblings she has? I don't even know.
I don't know a lot about her family, and But it's remarkable that they put this out here. And then they take a picture of her walking down a hallway wearing a women's, like, suit jacket.
Right.
Holding an overcoat. And, like, someone took the picture of her from behind, I think, while, you know, during her campaign process or whatever... and, you know, another conservative jumps on it and says, that jacket doesn't look like someone who came from poverty to me. You know, I mean, right. Like, it's crazy. Like, I mean, like, these, like, so she's wearing clothes that a professional woman with a job would wear. And so somehow that discredits, like, one, I don't think she ever claimed that she came from poverty. She just said that I think she grew up in the Bronx, I was born in Texas. I lived there till I was 10, so I could say I grew up in Texas, then I moved to fucking Youngstown, Ohio, right?
Right.
I mean, they're keying in, and I think that her, actually, the funny thing is, I think she's got a similar story, right? Like, she was in the Bronx till she was 10, then they moved to Westchester, and they're trying to pin her down on it, and then they're just like, oh, the high school you went to was... so rich and affluent. Like, well, it was a public high school. And
in an affluent neighborhood.
In an affluent neighborhood.
Where she was probably made fun of because she was the poor kid.
Or maybe she wasn't, because it seems like she's got the type of personality where she was able to figure it out. Right? And maybe she wasn't the poorest, but she obviously wasn't the richest. And it also doesn't fucking matter.
There's that.
Right?
Because what does pinning her down on you actually came from money really accomplish?
But she did. Whether she didn't. Like, right,
it's just totally a game to play. It's like what's
it's
your name?
The birtherism. It's a poor man's birtherism what they did to Obama, but you're saying it's...
Well, Elizabeth Warren is another example of someone that they're trying to pin her down on. You know, she's really rich. She can't represent these other people. She is rich. She's fabulously wealthy, and she's actually made it clear she's going to run for president. We can talk about that or not. I think we had some time on that. But just because someone has wealth doesn't mean they can't appreciate the disparity of wealth in this country and want to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the ultimate example of that probably would have been John Kennedy, and no one ever doubted whether or not John Kennedy came from money.
Right.
So, but I get your point. This is a really just a media attack on AOC to try to discredit her as she's walking in the door, and she seems to give zero fucks about it. And then, what was the dancing thing?
You know what? So she did a video when she was at Boston University where...
Okay, then I did see the video.
They reenacted the scene from Breakfast Club. All right, now I'll admit I've never seen the movie Breakfast Club from
You've
the
never
80s.
Seen Breakfast Club?
I've never, no.
Okay.
And it's funny, it comes up all the time, right? Because people reference it, I don't know the references, and people say, you've never seen Breakfast Club. Now, mind you, the only people who say the following words, you've never seen Breakfast Club,
are white. Well, so here's two things. It is a very white movie.
White as they come.
I'm not sure
there's a black person in the movie.
I am 100% sure there is not. The most ethnic person in that movie is Emilio Estevez, followed closely by Anthony Michael Hall. So that's how, actually Judd Nelson probably, but it's, so for my, it came out when I was in high school. So it's a movie about white kids in high school, and it's all about the problems of, you know, the nerds and the jocks and whatever.
Yeah.
It's actually a really good movie, but I can see why it wouldn't cross your radar in particular.
Right. I was...
Yeah, you would have been eight.
Right,
seven.
I mean, I was...
Eight, actually, seven, probably six.
Right, I mean, I was in my single-digit years.
Right.
And by the time I got to high school, like, the soup de jour of movies was Menace to Society.
Okay.
Right? Like, so, I mean...
Slightly different than Breakfast Club.
Right, so, sorry, I didn't catch your terrible movie.
It's actually a good movie, but go ahead. So, she reenacts this movie scene. Now, she's younger than you, by the way, which is kind of funny.
Right, she's 28, but she went to BU.
Right.
And I think Breakfast Club, I think those movies weren't
Chicago.
In Boston?
Shermer, Illinois, which is a town that doesn't exist, but a suburb of Chicago.
Okay. Well, but whatever, either way. I never saw it. I didn't even know. Like, I saw, when I saw the clip initially, she's dancing, like, on a rooftop.
Actually, are they doing Saint Elmo's Fire and not, because I don't remember a dancing
scene.
No. I remember the scene now. Yes, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right.
I'm not right. Twitter's right. Okay, I'm going off what Twitter has told me.
Twitter would never lie, but in this case, they are correct.
I don't know the dancing scene.
I now exactly know what it is. When I saw it,
it opens with just a picture of her, and this is 2011 when she was at BU, and the first thing I thought was, she's pretty cute, right? Like, honestly,
yeah,
that was the first thing. And then she, like, starts dancing. I'm like, oh, she's really cute. Right, and then other people come in, and then I'm like, oh, well, you guys ruined it. And then I'm like, wait, why am I watching? What is this? Right, I mean, it's just like a bunch of college artsy kids dancing. Like, what? Why is this a thing? What is this? And that was kind of my thought process on it. And then I didn't know any more of it, and I saw it from some conservative person who tweeted it, and then I responded to him like, I'm not sure what your deal is. And why this is a thing, but I am very confused, and I feel like maybe I'm not, but you are. It makes no sense to attack her on that. But
and so they come after her. I don't even know what was the basis of the attack.
The quote was, she's a commie nitwit, and this proves that this shows her in her commie nitwit state or something along those lines. I don't know.
All right. That's an incoherent attack. But I guess she came back with, like, another dance video, which I did not see the second one.
She did. Well, it was just a thing where she's in Congress. She's about to go into an office. It actually looked like a scene from Veep. But she just did, like, a little dance in the hallway, and then she went into an office. And kind of like, if you think that was bad, like, now I'm a congresswoman.
Right.
Check this out. So.
You know what? Good for her, though. That's something that I will give her credit for, is punching back at, this is a dumb you know, media-based attack trying to make me look bad over something that's fucking irrelevant, and I'm going to respond by going, yeah, I did that, and now I'm doing this. Fucking deal with it. Yeah. And there's plenty of Trump supporters who will say that's what he does all the time, and maybe that's why they like him. So whatever. But again, when you said if people would act like adults, we'd be better off, proof that that is not the current trend. There was one other thing from Trump that just confused the shit out of me, and that was his apparent defense of the Russians invading Afghanistan. It was a rambling... Now, let me be a little bit... defend him a little bit. That was the... So when the Russians invaded Afghanistan, they did create a story that... I want to say they said missionaries went into Afghanistan and were slaughtered, and they used that as their justification to invade Afghanistan and literally just, like, shoot people who were riding on mules.
I don't know if that story was ever...
Oh, I think it's pure bullshit.
Completely fabricated.
It absolutely is. Absolutely 100% bullshit. But that was their excuse. So they had their excuse for why they... I mean, they wanted to conquer a very difficult piece of land to conquer, as history has proven. And they used that as their official excuse. And, I mean, being completely fair, we used the attack on the USS Maine as a reason to start a war. We used the Gulf of Tonkin as a reason to start a war. And those were bullshit, too. So I'm not trying to be completely, you know, rah-rah America guy. But having said that, Trump gets up there and says, well, there were terrorists in Afghanistan, and that's why Russia did this. And I'm like, oh, God, dude, no. It was just bizarre.
Even, I mean, he says that Russia is no longer, Russia used to be the Soviet Union. It's not anymore because Russia invaded Afghanistan.
Right.
And the invasion of Afghanistan was very expensive, bankrupted Russia, and that's why Russia is no longer the Soviet Union, and they're now Russia. There used to be a lot of other countries that were a part of Russia as a Soviet Union.
I mean, that's all true.
Well, yeah, but it's not because... Russia wasn't bankrupted because they invaded Afghanistan.
I don't... Not entirely. But, I mean, Russia was bankrupted for a bunch of reasons. One of them was an arms race with the United States that did not go well. Two was a very poorly run government based on the fact that while the Soviet model might sound great on paper, when you get greed and corruption involved, it goes south in a hurry.
Okay, but so literally what you're about to say...
a shit ton of money in Afghanistan.
But, okay, fine. But that's like saying... that's if the U.S. goes bankrupt, right,
that'd be like tomorrow, blaming Vietnam, yeah.
That's like blaming it on Vietnam or blaming it on fucking NASA. Right? I mean, like, come on.
No, I agree. That's not why they went...
Did Russia spend a lot of money
in
Afghanistan? Yes. Is it the reason why the entire government collapsed?
No, of course not.
And the Soviet Union collapsed?
Of course not.
Okay, that's the key here. Let's stay on point, right? Like I don't even understand why you're trying to entertain this.
I'm not entertaining. Like,
this is... this, of all the things where you will give Trump no credit whatsoever, when he comes up with this bullshit revisionist history... Like, this is the thing that you're going to give him a fucking pass
on? No, I'm not giving him a pass.
Fuck out of here.
I'm not giving him a pass.
Yeah, you are.
No,
literally
I'm not.
Just said, oh, whoa.
No, I'm saying, I'm putting...
Go ahead, dig yourself out.
I'm not digging myself out of anything. I said it's bullshit. I'm not arguing that. I am, however, saying that that would be the logic behind it, that they burned a shit ton of money in Afghanistan, and they left that war because it was costing them so much and they were going nowhere. And if you let me go down this road even further, I'm going to talk about our involvement, the Saudis' involvement, and how this ultimately leads to the Taliban existing in 9/11 and all that other shit. So,
that's all historical fact. But I mean, his breakdown of the reason we don't have a Soviet Union anymore is because Russia invaded Afghanistan
is a very, very flawed point, and the idea that. That they were doing it because they were responding to terrorism is repeating Russian propaganda, period. Or Soviet propaganda, period. There was no attack on Russians by Afghans. They just wanted that chunk of land. And
but does he... First of all, like now you have to wonder, who is telling him, who is giving him information?
You know, I...
Because here's
that's
the problem.
That's a good point.
Listen. I literally think that someone, my initial thought is someone gave him like a rundown, right? Like a bullet pointed sheet. He glanced at it, and somehow what he took from it was Soviet Union collapsed because Russia invaded Afghanistan. That's kind of what I hope, right? That he saw some bullet points, right? And he took every third bullet point, and that's what he came up with. But the other thing is, like, and I don't want to go down the conspiracy road, right? But
you're giving me a flashback to my career that I'm gonna insert in here.
But if he say. Like, this is the exact thing that Russia would want you to say. Like, oh, well, the only reason the Soviet Union collapses is Afghanistan just ruined us, right? Like, come on.
So years ago, I was in a meeting with, like, big shots. I'm a junior-level engineer, and I read through this proposal, and I had made some bullet points. And the guy sitting next to me sees my bullet points, looks over my shoulder, sees them, misinterprets them, and then starts speaking out in the meeting and ends up looking like a complete fucking idiot. He was saying the words that were on my sheet of paper, and like some of them were questions that were just my notes for me, and this guy tried to steal my work and ended up just completely fumbling, and it was hysterical to me because he couldn't look at me and go, well, I just stole it from this guy.
Who does that?
But that's what
he said. What?
It was,
really?
It was great.
He was like an upper level executive?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Jesus Christ.
I forget what his rank was, but yeah, he was a...
That was a weird bark you just did, by the way.
Yeah. All right. But yeah, that was a weird moment in my career. All right, man. So we reviewed a whiskey that we've both had enough of to kill a rhino over the course of our lives.
Yes.
Did some politics talk.
Wasn't as fun, but I think
it was fun. I had fun.
No, it was fun. It was fun. I think we were both trying to, you know, as we talked ahead of time, we said, hey, let's do less Trump in politics.
And all we did was fucking Trump.
Trump in politics. But
all right. All right, people, man. Still listen. All right, go ahead.
We got a weekend coming up. We got some football coming up. I was wrong on my predictions on the college football playoffs, by the way.
Okay. I was disappointed because I don't like either Alabama or Clemson.
Well,
because
I think I said, well, I wasn't completely wrong. I think I said Notre Dame could win, but I anticipated that Clemson would win. And I think I did pick Oklahoma. I picked Oklahoma over Alabama.
And second half Oklahoma was better than second half Alabama. Right. But unfortunately, Oklahoma, they dug such a hole for themselves that it was irrelevant by the time
Oklahoma's
we got to that
point. Oklahoma's defense is just so bad. So I was hoping.
Their defense is bad when it's. It's weird, right? Because they were so awful in the first half. And they were fucking awful most of the season. And then under certain spurts, they shut it down.
They made some plays. Yeah. And I also think that Alabama kind of let their foot off the gas a little bit because of the lead that they had. But I was...
Because whenever they had to get the lead back to a comfortable zone, yeah, they did it in one series. Yeah. Right.
So I was way wrong on my CFP predictions. NFL this weekend, we got our wild card games coming up, which start Saturday. Which, by the way, our
FanDuel thing, right?
Our FanDuel thing. Don't forget that. But we got wild card weekend, so it starts with the Colts and the Texans. We got Houston at -1.5. Not that we have to bet on the
spread,
on the spread, but you know what? It's in Houston, but I think I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to take the Colts in that game.
I kind of want to also because the Colts weirdly have a very strong defense for a change.
The only issue is that T.Y. Hilton is questionable, and I haven't seen anything that has...
And he's one of their two passing game weapons. It's right. Him and Eric Ebron.
Right, like, so that's tricky, but I think I'll stick with it for now. If he doesn't play, then Houston wins that game. Then you have Dallas and the Seahawks, which that's a game where
I like I'm going Seattle. I'm going to Seattle because I trust Russell Wilson on the playoffs.
Right. I mean, it's Dallas -2, but I like Seattle. I like their offense a little bit more than I like Dallas's, and I like their defense. Cowboys defense is pretty good, but I'm going to stick with Seattle. And then Sunday, you got the Chargers and the Ravens. That's at Baltimore.
Lamar Jackson is a young guy who's been tearing it up. I mean, he's been playing great ball. But first playoff game versus Phillip Rivers, who's definitely established.
Yeah, but that Baltimore defense is really good.
It's savage, I agree.
It's really good.
And but Los Angeles is.
But Baltimore just went to L.A. and beat the Chargers 2 weeks ago.
All right.
Which ultimately ended up keeping the Steelers out of the playoffs, aside from the fact that the Steelers couldn't win so the last half of the season. So I don't know. I think I'm gonna go with Phillip Rivers on a mission beats Lamar Jackson. But I wouldn't be surprised if Baltimore wins that
game. I would agree with that.
And then our last game is Eagles versus Bears. The legend of Nick Foles rises again.
Right.
Over Mitchell Trubisky, Cleveland hometown favorite. Played at Menor.
That's correct.
And then went to North Carolina. Chicago is at -6.5, which I think is way too high. And if you don't understand lines and spreads, Chicago at -6.5 means that Chicago is pegged to win the game by at least
a touchdown, almost
6.5 points. Now you can't score half points, which means that Chicago needs to win by 7. And which would also mean that if you have a bookie, you could get the Eagles at probably -6.5 or +6.5.
Right.
Meaning that they need to lose by, if they lost six, by anything less than six, you would win money. The way that I would go is the Eagles defense is not nearly as good as it was. Actually, I would just take the Eagles across the board.
I'm going with the Bears because I'm just enthralled with Khalil Mack. I said when the Bears traded for Khalil Mack, I said I would not have given up what they did to get him. When they signed him to that massive extension, I said I would never paid that kind of player that much money.
And then
I would have been completely fucking wrong on both points because Dude is just he changed a team in one trade.
Well, here's
I'm a big fan of his because he's a Buffalo. He went to school in Buffalo.
I watched Nick Foles take a team to win a Super Bowl last year.
Yeah, no doubt.
And beat a Super Bowl MVP. And Mitchell Trubisky, I don't have a lot of faith in.
That's fair.
I mean, he's had some really good games.
And some really not so good games.
Really bad games. And I do not trust him, so...
Well, there's our football predictions. You'll get to hear them as some of the games are going on. And good talking to you, brother. We'll talk soon.
All right, man.
Later.
All right.